C3 with TNA Wrestling and EHC. Everyone hates Cleveland, but why? The world needs Cleveland.
Welcome to another edition of Everyone Hates Cleveland. Yes, we're back. It's been 100 days since the last podcast. Joining me tonight is a former member of EHC, a current member of the Tribe Daily, a site that's been around. Nino, it's almost like the cockroach of Indians blogosphere. Your site has been around forever. Like, when did you start? First of all, how you doing?
Doing well.
So now he's like doing the math. When did the Tribe Daily, when did it make its debut? Do you remember what year?
08.
So your site's been around as long as almost all of the sites. I mean, I know WFNY, where I write now, has been around since 08. And of course, you've been writing it. I'm probably the only person who's written at more Indian sites is you. Let's see if I can get them. You wrote, of course,
this is surreal.
So you've written at the Cleveland Fan. You wrote at STO. Cleveland Fan stuff went to STO. You wrote at IBI.
Yep.
You wrote at EHC. Yep. You wrote at, of course, the Tribe Daily. That's five.
I was throwing out like sporting news well before I actually had any sort of like audience, just writing random stuff like 07, like that whole season.
Yep.
I wrote a blog on sporting news, and that's kind of how I started being like, all right, let's put this out there. Let's see if I could get any traction with it. I've written for Bleacher Report, back slideshows for.
Yeah, I wrote there too. I'll just leave it there. Yeah. I met some. You know what? Now looking back at my time at Bleacher Report, and you were, I want to say, like, because we skirted. You know, we were right around the same places always at the same time, and we wrote at IBI at the same time. I want to say we were at Bleacher Report at the same time. Probably like we were both in the corner of the room, not wanting to actually admit that we were there, but we were still writing there.
I was there when it was. I got out like right before it started to go really downhill. And there's some really talented people that are like one of the.
You're gonna mention. In the first two people you mentioned, you're gonna mention the person I'm thinking of right now.
Well, I know like Ryan Lewis was there for a little bit,
yeah.
And Ryan Lewis is obviously doing great things at ABJ, but. I'm going to go off the Indians' beaten path here. J.J. Stankovitz is a writer for Notre Dame, and he does some White Sox stuff. He was brilliant, and they had some really good gems over at Bleacher Report until they turned into whatever.
Well, I mean, Samantha Button was there. I mean,
her. Yes.
See, I mean, she dominated in all the Cleveland stuff, and, of course, she's now working for, I think it's NBC now, you know, in New York City. So it wasn't all bad. Yeah. And I wrote like seven pieces, and actually I don't think I ever wrote Indian stuff. I think I was writing Ohio State stuff there. So we could probably do 10 podcasts on the maze that we've gone through to get to the point we're at here. And I, you know, as we, obviously the elephant in the room is the World Series. We'll get there in a second, but, first and foremost, to everybody who's been sending me emails and tweets and, DMs and Facebook posts who've been asking about the website. Right now, of course, EHC is no longer a website. I just wanted to let you guys know you can see Nino's stuff right now currently. You can find all of his stuff at thetribedaily.com. He's been writing there forever, as you mentioned, since 2008. And it's been sporadic, but he's been there every year, multiple posts. And he'll go through, like all of us, he'll go through these streaks of lots of posting and streaks of not a lot of posting. But during the World Series, he's been fairly consistent. You can find me sporadically writing over at WFNY. Where this goes in the future, we don't know. I know that Nino, Steve Orbanek, and I have been talking about the podcast in particular. So this is going to be a regular thing in whatever format that it shows up in. And most of the stuff that we're going to be talking about is Indians. But Nino, as you mentioned, we all have kind of this kind of broad background where I think the three of us can talk about a lot of different things. So come check the podcast out. Honestly, don't know where it's going to be hosted. As of right now, just check us out at the SoundCloud account, soundcloud.com / Everybody Hates Cleveland. You can find all of our stuff there for now. And when we find a host for this, I'm going to try to get some of this stuff on WFNY, but when we find an ultimate host for our podcast, we will, of course, fill you guys in. All right, enough of that rambling. Nino.
Yes.
And we were talking off air, and we're kind of in one of those unreal, surreal kind of places right now for Cleveland Indians fandom and really Cleveland Indians followers, and really Cleveland followers for that matter. The Indians were literally tomorrow at this time, it is 8:30 as we're podcasting on Monday night, 24 hours from now, the Cleveland Indians will be playing a game in Cleveland for the World Series against, and if that's not incredulous enough, and you know, people who grew up in the 90s, of course, know we were in the World Series twice then, so it's maybe not as incredulous as it is for me, who was born in the 70s. But we're not only hosting the World Series, but we're hosting the Chicago Cubs. I mean, I think if any Cleveland fan sat back and thought, what would the perfect opponent be? I'm pretty sure at some point the thought of playing the Cubs probably crossed our mind. It almost feels like this. I don't know if I'm ecstatic, if I'm happy, if I'm scared. The national media is probably going to hate us now, but I don't know, man. How are you feeling about all this? We're in the World Series, man. I mean, the hell with the Cubs. We're in the World Series.
This is as surreal as you saying that my site has been around forever. Like, I don't, like, what is that? That's weird, man. What universe are we in that the Chicago Cubs, who have never won a World Series in any of our lifetimes, are playing the Cleveland Indians? Like, one of these teams is going to get a World Series, and there's nothing the rest of baseball can do about it. I mean, it's pretty awesome when you think about that, but I think about the last time we've been this far. I mean, we were talking about, you know, 95 and how I don't even remember 95 because I was what, seven? Six. No, I was six.
Me too.
And yeah.
Me too.
And like, I remember faint memories of 97, but like, thinking back to 2007 when we were in the ALCS, and I know I wrote a post about it, but it was just sort of like, that was cool, and being in that moment, it was something, but we never reached the World Series that year, and now we're here, and I can't believe it, because this is the first time that I can now, like, years from now, I'll be able to look back and be like, yeah, I remember that. And I just, after it happened, I just sat on the couch just staring at the TV, like, not even knowing what to think or what to feel. I mean, I wrote a post about it, but I just don't have a feeling. It's just, it's incredible. It's born from not knowing what this is like. It's just unreal. Well,
I think on top of it, I mean, the incredulousness, it goes even further, because, you know, as this podcast over the year has kind of developed, and I think, you know, if you go back to our preview stuff at EHC, especially with this podcast, Mike Hattery and I talked a lot about the makeup of this team in March. And we, of course, the first thing that kind of, you know, gave us the left cross was the Michael Brantley news. And then, you know, throughout this year, we've had so much of that. We've had Brantley out. Brantley's played 11 games in pretty meaningless games. Jan Gomes has been ineffective and then was out and is on the roster but hasn't, you know, even seen the field. You've got Salazar, who's been out for, you know, multiple weeks now and is coming back and has made this roster, and we'll get into that in a second. But, you know, he's missed a sizable amount of time. Carrasco has missed a sizable amount of time and is, you know, of course, out of everything. You know, this, we get Andrew Miller to supplement our starting rotation, and you know, I mean, in our freaking bullpen ends up as the strongest bullpen maybe in the league, which I think in July, if you'd have said that before the Miller deal, I think both of us would have probably chuckled and laughed. But I mean, is it a combination, you know, of the fact that it is our Indians who haven't won a World Series since 1948, which is probably going to get drowned out in all of this 1908 noise? in 1945 noise since the last time the Cubs have been in the World Series? Or is it the fact that this Indians team has been, it feels like we've been behind the eight ball all season with, you know, all of our injuries, and we make it to the playoffs and the national media, essentially ESPN and Yahoo, not one person picked us to get out of the ALCS. And here we are. Not only are we in the World Series, but we've lost one game in the playoffs. And this is with a rotation. This is with a rotation, you know, in the ALCS, that didn't even have Trevor Bauer. We're talking about our rotation was Clevenger. I start with him on purpose. No.
It was supposed to be Clevenger, yeah, and then, right.
Well, no, I take it back.
Barf.
We've got Ryan Merritt. I mean, where's he come from? We get Ryan Merritt. We've got, you know, of course, Josh Tomlin, who at one point this year I thought for sure was going to be out of baseball by now. And of course, Corey Kluber, the potential Cy Young Award winner. Is that what makes us even more incredulous, do you think, is the fact that we have a team right now that just, you know, a Boston fan emailed me and said, it seems like Chicago's destined. And I'm thinking to myself, man, if destiny's knocking at anyone's door, it kind of feels like the Indians, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's something, because you look at all of that. I mean, can you really blame anybody for not thinking that the Indians would be? I mean, of course people are going to pick Boston. Of course people are going to pick Toronto, because you just have to at some point look at everything that just keeps happening from an outsider's perspective and say, well, there's no way that they can overcome this. There's no way. You lost one, you lost two, you lost three. You keep losing key players. Like, of course, but the thing is, a lot of those people, they didn't see what was happening throughout the year. They weren't seeing how well this team was meshing and how well this team was playing in spite of that stuff, and just saying, oh yeah, okay, whatever. Next man up. Who's next? Anyone want to fill this role? Okay, cool. We got it. It's good. It was just another, you know, the thing with Bauer is just another thing. It's like, okay, cool. The strange thing is, when he went out, I was just like, and I think a few of us were talking about it, it kind of just felt like, all right, well, we're still going to win this game because the bullpen's going to come in and throw eight innings and it's all going to be fine, because we've seen them do it before. They did it earlier when Carrasco went down. So there's just something about this team. I know you mentioned the person say Chicago's destined, and yeah, you know, I don't like throwing around the word destiny just because it is what it is. But this team, there's just something about them, and there's no quitting them. And when you have that sort of aspect about a team, it's hard to bet against them, and it's hard to say, hey, you guys are done before you even get to a point where they could be done. So,
well, I keep coming back to, you know, I keep coming back to the Chicago and I don't know. I guess their fans kind of stick out to me. I recall I was talking a little bit on Twitter about this last night. I recall a day last trade deadline where I broached the topic of dealing. If you're going to deal, at the time we were looking for, you know, a corner outfielder, as we always are. Before, this was literally right before Lonnie Chisenhall became our corner outfielder, but that's for another day. I don't want to get down that path. But he's playing great, by the way. I'm not trying to rip on Lonnie Chisenhall. I just want to throw that out there before I start getting the nomina flack. But I had mentioned a deal for Carrasco for this little guy named Javier Baez, who I'm sure we'll talk about in a couple of minutes, and I think Jorge Soler. And I the Chicago fans, within about 3 minutes, probably 100 Chicago fans just destroyed me, because, of course, they didn't have the slightest iota of a clue who Carlos Carrasco was, even though he had been one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball for about a year at that point. I see a lot of bravado and a lot of idiocy coming, and of course it's Twitter, Nino, and we know where that can take us. But you know, are we now, because we're facing the Cubs, are we now once again, even though, you know, are we now once again, are we now once again the team behind the eight ball? I mean, is everybody going to look at us as the underdogs?
They absolutely are. I mean, and I cannot blame Pete. And you're talking about a 100-win team. I mean, you're talking about a team that it's been set up for them from the very get-go. I mean, they've been running wild on teams all year. They went through the NL Central. They went through the playoffs. It's a team that has been built for the regular season and the post. I mean, they're just all well-rounded team. I mean, you can't really blame people for saying, all right, well, Chicago's the better team. They are the better team. They've got better talent. They've got a deep roster. You don't get to the World Series without having a good team. I mean, that's one, but two is they're stacked. They've got players at every position that are good offensively. They're good defensively. They got good starters. They've got a good bullpen. I mean, you can't help but just say, all right, well, but the thing is, that's not how the game is played. Okay, yeah, so on paper, they're outclassed. The Indians are outclassed at almost every position, but they have been every round. You keep, like, you would see those position previews and, you know, yeah, Boston's got, you know, edge at DH and first base and, you know, center field and left field. Okay, great. And Toronto's got a better, you know, a better starting rotation. Well, yeah, because we don't have a starting rotation. I mean, it is what it is, but
the only thing we heard about with Toronto is how they could hit home runs and how they were going to destroy the rotation. And, you know, with a guy like Tomlin and a guy like Merritt, for crying out loud, I mean, it seemed there's no way this team was going to do it. But, you know, sometimes, as you know, Mike Hattery's been mentioning this, lots of the guys that we follow have been mentioning this. There seems to be this kind of this wild card, this unmeasurable that part of the reason why we're baseball fans is because you never know. I mean, you never know, right?
Right, exactly.
So as we look at this Cubs team, you know, this is the first Cubs team, you know, I mean, the last time they won the World Series, it was Tinkers to Evers to Chance. I mean, that historic combination was the group of infielders to win a World Series back in 1908. You look at this team, this is a Theo Epstein team. You know, Epstein, mm-hmm. of course, known for the Boston Red Sox. It's an extremely young team. A lot of people are trying to make comparisons to this team to boppers of the past, and I've actually heard some Indians comparisons to the early 90s, and I can actually see some of that with the youthful offense that they have. This team feels a lot like, you know, the Joe Maddon teams from Tampa, those teams that drafted so well, built that good core of young players. But the difference for me with this Cubs team and the Indians team is they've also got starting pitching. What's the one thing for you, Nino, off the top that scares you about the Chicago Cubs team, either offensively, defensively, or rotation-wise?
The thing that I think gives them the edge that I would worry about, because I mean, you talk about their offense, and their offense is really good, and they're a team that has the ability to score runs. I mean, you look at some of their wins in the previous rounds; they would win games by a very big number. I mean, so that offense is obviously something that you want to worry about. But I mean, you're talking about October baseball; it's a little bit colder. It's going to be about 50 degrees tomorrow and probably even worse on Wednesday. So offense kind of has not the same effect that it may have in weather that's about 10 to 15 degrees warmer. So to me, you're playing low scoring games. I mean, it's the playoffs. You have two teams that are stocked with pitching. So as far as their offense is concerned, yes, it's something to worry about, but it's probably not what I'm most worried about. I look at their bullpen compared to some of the other bullpens, and they have a couple guys that they can play matchups with, and they are much deeper in terms of their bench where they can do that sort of stuff. Whereas the Indians, they're kind of stuck in, well, first of all, they only have, I'd say Merritt's a left-hander, but they're probably going to be saving him for starting duty. So guy that you can match up with, whereas the Cubs, they got, yeah, they got Chapman in the back. That's your lefty. And he's pretty much your late inning guy, but they also got Montgomery. They also got Wood. So they can play that matchup and do with a guy like Lonnie Chisenhall. Are you going to pinch hit for him? Are you going to put Guyer in on those situations? If so, then you're losing your best outfielder, defensively at least. So to me, there's a little bit of a matchup problem that I think the Indians face because they keep moves. And then obviously when you're dealing with a guy like Joe Maddon, he's more prone to do that. To me, I think the flexibility was they can't make those moves, but I mean, Tito's been pushing all the right buttons up to this point, so there's nothing to say that he won't continue to do that and even throw caution to the wind in instances where it probably is not advised to do what you would expect to do. I mean, to me, but well, I mean, we'll see how that pans out.
I think I want to get to that. The big move that of course Indians fans are talking about is that trade for Andrew Miller. But I think, you know, just prior to that trade, the Cubs went out and got Montgomery and got Chapman, loading up with lefties, which, mm-hmm. you know, was probably their one weakness, just as our weakness was perhaps the back end of our bullpen. They did a really nice job of addressing that. And I think, you know, asset wise, you know, this is where Theo Epstein scares me, because you give that guy's ass. This guy's got, not only does he have monetary assets right now, he's got, you know, player assets. You know, a guy like Javier Baez is a guy who's stepping up now in the World Series. You know, last year he was expendable. I wrote a piece last year about trading for him. So I think the depth of that bullpen, you know, I think with Toronto, the minute we started dipping into that bullpen, that's when, you know, we could break games open. Whereas I think, and even with Boston, you know, who didn't have a rotation quite as good, but we got into that bullpen quite early and were able to get after them. That's an excellent point. You know, matchup wise, you mentioned Joe Maddon and, you know, his, you know, it's an interesting matchup between managers. You've got Maddon, who, while has some feel to him, is certainly a guy who's played the numbers. He's sabermetric GM's, you know, best case scenario for manager. Going against Tito, who is, I don't know if saying that he's the last person on the planet who would use metrics, because I don't believe that. I do believe he uses numbers, but he definitely is not a numbers first guy. I mean, you know, I think part of the fun this season has been the fact that we've been, you know, jackhammering Tito for bunting and the way he's handled the bullpen up to this point of getting Andrew Miller. The way he's handled the bullpen certainly is a way that a lot of Sabre guys have been talking about. And I know 2 years ago, I remember podcasting with Mike about this very way of handling a pen. The fact that they get Miller, does it make you wonder, you know, first of all, how do you see this matchup panning out between the managers and how they handle teams, especially with Cleveland? Cleveland going to Chicago is interesting. Yeah. With you know, you got Santana, you know, feeling balls and left today. Is this a clear Maddon advantage, or is Tito the kind of guy, you know, you talk about how the Indians play together. He's been calling a pretty tight, group of moves in the playoffs. They've of course won all but one game, but is this matchup old school versus new school? Is this a matchup that favors one side or the other? Is Maddon favored just because he has more tools? And, you know, is our pen, I felt like, well, our pen, you know, decimated teams, and in my opinion is perhaps the best bullpen in the World Series. But are we handcuffed a little bit because we only really have one lefty?
You know, I don't know. I thought it would be a little bit of a handcuff, but it doesn't. Andrew Miller for two. I mean, you're using him for most. I mean, for at least that you would need a bullpen for. So it's not really. I mean, it hasn't really been an issue. I ask if Madden is the favorite. I think Madden advantage because of those extra tools that he didn't necessarily say that he's, I think, and I don't, a matchup of two really good managers that have their own strengths and have, I mean, Madden's obviously been here before. Tito's been here and won before. Tito's been pushing all the right buttons. Madden's been okay. He hasn't called it as perfectly as Tito has this postseason, but I mean, when you have the team that the Cubs have, you have a little bit of margin for error. Tito really hasn't had margin for error. Like, if any of those moves that he has made, like especially in that Boston series, backfires, we might not be sitting here. I mean, Andrew Miller goes in and gives up the lead in one of those games, you're done, you know? Like, it's interesting to see how perfectly everything has worked for Tito. And he's made, like, whether they worked or not, that's the thing. And that's something that I always talk about is, and we did it earlier in the year, it's like Tito would make a move and it would work, mean it would be the right move. He's made a lot of these moves that he's made in the postseason, they have worked and they have been absolutely 100% the right move because you said something about feel. I mean, he has a feel, and what I have felt has more often than not, Tito has made the move that I would think would give his team the best chance to win, the best opportunity for his team to succeed. And he's done that so far. So I think it's just a matchup of two good managers that have their strengths, and they have different advantages based off how their team is built. And they've both called a pretty good series so far, and they'll have to call at least four more good games if they want to win.
Well, you have to wonder. So Madden, you know, Madden's a guy who's been knocking at the door now for a while, not with the Cubs, but with Tampa Bay prior. And you know, Tito's been there before. And I know we'll get into numbers in a second, but you know, you look at this Indians team, and I, you know, being a fairly smart guy who likes to pay attention to numbers, maybe not as much as other people, but I do like listening to the really smart numbers guys talk about the numbers. And this Indians team, with this incredibly intense sabermetric front office, one of the best in the business, if not the best in the business. I think saying that's not hyperbole. You know, you've got to wonder. So they've been dealing with Tito all these years, and I, you know, it's funny to kind of watch the people kind of figure out like what the deal is. And then, you know, I think the one thing that's come out in this past month is that Chris Antonetti and Tito Francona are so on the same page. I think there's a lot of question about that. I think a lot of people assumed that Shapiro and Francona were kind of the centrifuge of that relationship, but we're seeing now that Chris Antonetti is as sabermetric a guy as you can possibly get in the front office, is totally buying into Tito Francona and his, you know, maybe he saved his job 3 years ago, who knows, but you know, here's the thing. My question, I guess, kind of heads in this direction. Like, does Tito Francona have such a feel for the teams that he coaches? When you watch this team and the way they talk about him, and you go back to those Boston teams in 2007, 2004, and in between and after, he seems to figure out just what makes a team tick and then gets these guys to want to run through a wall for him. Can that overcome some of this number stuff? If you get a guy believing he can go out in a situation where it's not supposed to perform and then he performs, I mean, it can't that be a little bit on the manager and just that belief system? That's one. And two, is can it just be, are we maybe overstating this? I mean, can I hate to say this, but is Andrew Miller, is he just so good at what he does? Is it possible that that one addition to this club, which solidified the bullpen, which ultimately saved a rotation spot for us, if you think about it, is Andrew Miller the ultimate, I don't know, wipeout tool that can just wipe mistakes away fresh and clean? Because as you mentioned, if Andrew Miller is not there to do the right thing, and we didn't have an Andrew Miller before that, you know, where are we right now? Are we even in the playoffs? I mean, legit question.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't think we're this, we're definitely not this far if we don't have Andrew Miller, that's for sure. We're still in the playoffs. But yeah, I don't see them overcoming the injuries to their starting rotation without having a guy like Miller who picked up the slack when they needed that. Your other question about Tito, I mean, we've seen it work to this point. I mean, yeah, he is most definitely a guy that he just, for whatever reason, has that aspect about him, that aura, that respect. I mean, you saw the minute they brought him in here, he had people wanting to come to Cleveland. That in the past, it's like, it was an afterthought. It was, okay, well, you know, unless they had a little bit more money than some of the other teams or an opportunity, guys weren't coming to Cleveland, and they were coming to Cleveland because of him, because of his reputation and because of the relationships that he formed. And that's why he's here because of those other relationships. And while the Indians are here in the World Series are because of those relationships that he's formed, and he's bonded this team together in just a way that only he can do. And that counts for something. That's absolutely, he has, numbers be damned, he's overcome a lot of stuff this year. And this team has overcome a lot of this stuff in this year. And that's why they're here. They're in the World Series because of those aspects about him that just make players play better than they should be. I mean, we've mentioned it. I mean, they are outclassed at every position, almost every position. And round after round, they've been, well, this team isn't as talented as the next one. Well, talent be damned. It's not played on paper. It's played on the field. And when it comes to playing on the field, Cleveland Indians are one of the best because of Tito. I mean, it is what it is. You have to call it like that.
All right. So we've got game one. You know, John Lester,
yes,
going up against Corey Kluber, of course. And, game two is another interesting story altogether in and of itself because of who's starting. But, you know, Lester's been really good this year. Yep. That being said, our offense, if you look at a couple of pieces that have been put out today, it looks like our offense against his specific arsenal has some players who can attack his arsenal, for lack of a better term.
His yips?
Say that again?
His yips? Attack his yips?
Yeah. So my question to you now, again, you know, you talk about momentum, you talk about the Indians and how we've been kind of riding this wave for the better part of 3 weeks now, you know, at tail end, that last week of the season heading in. Lester's been pitching pretty well. But there definitely are quirks, as you mentioned, and he's definitely been a guy that the Indians players have been able to hit over the years. Is this an advantage right away? I mean, you've got Corey Kluber, who is as Corey Kluber as you can get right now. I mean, this is a guy who's in the groove, coming off that late season injury where he missed a start. So, you know, the other side of all this is that Cubs offense, who at one point, you know, the Cubs are down 2-1 to the Dodgers, and that offense just erupted. In fairness, you know, I mean, it's not like they're performing at a high rate. If you look at some of the metrics there, they're definitely for some holes in the offense, but they were just pouring runs on. You know, Baez is kind of at the center of that, is a guy very similar in makeup offensively to, say, Jose Ramirez. So wow, I think our offense can get after Lester and that cutter of his, is it possible that this Chicago Cubs offense can walk into to Cleveland and do what they've been doing all year and just club them a little bit? Because the one thing you can say about Kluber is when he struggles, he's given up some hard hit balls. He's given up some home runs. But of late, he's been, of course, absolutely outstanding. I mean, this seems to be a very intriguing matchup to me in that I think we can get after Lester, but I just can't let go of, as good as Kluber is, and I think he's arguably one of the top four or five pitchers in all of baseball, as good as he is are we running into a machine right now offensively that is something we're going to have to overcome offensively against Lester, or is Kluber just too good?
You know, if they do run into a machine offensively, they're not going to overcome it. It's just not – I don't think it's something that you're going to do in a seven-game series. You're not going to out-hit and outscore the Cubs. It's just not going to happen. That's not the game that you're going to play and win if you're the Indians. It's got to be low-scoring games. It's got to be close ones. It's got to be let's get a lead – within the first 3 to 4 innings, regardless of who's on the mound, and play with the lead, play ahead, play. And if you're not in the lead, you're keeping it close. You're keeping it within striking distance, because they're not going to win the 8-4-4 games that those Cubs have been playing up until this point. I mean, you look at some of those games against the Dodgers, the ones that they won, they've let it get out of control, and the Dodgers weren't able to come back. You look at the games that the Cubs lost, 6-5 in 13 innings, 1-0, and then obviously 6-0 was your kind of anomaly. But you got to keep it close. You have to be able to either have a lead or be within striking distance, because you're not outscoring that team. You're not doing it. I don't think that. Granted, this Indians offense is underrated, and it's got the capabilities of scoring runs, but they've been playing playoff baseball, and playoff baseball is close games. You come up with a key hit when you need it, but you're not playing these slugfests.
They've really done a nice job, you know, of getting in the heads of the teams they've played.
Yes.
They completely. The one thing that our rotation does really well is skirt the corners, and mm-hmm. It was kind of fun watching Kluber, Tomlin, who seems to be grooving again, at Merritt for sure, nipping corners, getting calls, and you talk about a guy like Roberto Perez, who's fantastic. Yes. Behind the plate, as everybody has noticed, offensively he does some things, but of course he's back there to make our rotation better, and you can put a lot of emphasis on us. Our rotation and our bullpen getting into the heads of Toronto simply because Perez is framing really well back there. If you watch him dance behind the plate too, he's really fun back there. He's a guy who's all about misdirection. He'll line up on the inside and then bounce to the outside. He's getting into hitters' heads, and that clearly got at Toronto. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, if you look at his framing numbers, he's the best framer in the playoffs right now, and one of the best in baseball. Is this maybe the chink in the armor of the Chicago Cubs? If you watch those early games when the Dodgers were beating them, they look out of it. They looked out of it when I go back to that the first game that Kershaw pitched when he was Kershaw, and you know their bullpen is pretty good as well in Los Angeles. Even Maddon looked stressed. I mean, it was very interesting to me that as Los Angeles was rolling a little bit, it looked like Chicago was a team that you could kind of get in the heads with. Is it possible that this kind of veteran Indians team, not kinda, I mean we're a veteran team. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that the way to win is, as you were mentioning, that playoff baseball, good base running, which the Indians are really good at,
yes.
Good fielding, which, dependent on where you're hitting the ball, the Indians are really good at, good pitching and good bullpen, that kind of consistent pressure. Is that kind of what put the Red Sox and the Blue Jays under, is this consistent pressure, this kind of relentless aggression that Tom Hamilton was talking about, where – you can't really rest on anybody in this lineup because you get on the bases, you've got guys that can really make your life miserable. You've got some guys at the bottom of the order like Lonnie Chisenhall, who was playing pretty well. And you got guys like Francisco Lindor, who can carry a team kind of at times. And, I mean, think about it. This playoffs, probably the one guy that we've counted on in the regular season, Jose Ramirez, hasn't gotten it going yet. If he gets it going, yes, that seems to be something that could really, really hamper this team. And then we saw Mike Napoli at the tail end of that Toronto series kind of catch fire for the first time since, seems like since May, almost, yeah, June, July. So is this, are the Cubs young enough? Because they're a young team, loaded with a lot of young players who are going to be dancing in this World Series for the first time in their careers. Is the best way to get after them guys like Kluber, who never breaks a sweat? Guys like Francisco Lindor, who's great for us because he's always happy, but probably drives other teams mad. Jason Kipnis, who's kind of a Pete Rose sort of, you know, we're going to rub it in your face kind of guy. This team seems to have a good idea on the mechanics of how other teams think. And I think that's where a guy like Tito Francona really steps it up. Is this a team that can get in your head? And is that where we get the Cubs?
Yeah, I think it has to be. It has to be. That's the game that you have to play. The Cubs are really good by tons of metrics. You look at some of the numbers that they've put up this year, and they're just insane. Like some of the – just look at it. Some of the – like they shouldn't be doing that. But again, like I keep saying, it's not played on paper. It's played between those chalk lines, and it's played – with some of that stuff that you're talking about there, it's getting inside the game and doing those things that make teams successful in the long run. You talk about getting in your head. I think one of the things that they need to do is, I mentioned it kind of jokingly when you were talking about Lester, but the dude is just a weird case. I mean, he is so good. He's good. He's great. He's a great pitcher. But for some reason, he will not throw over to first. And you have one of the best field base running teams in the entire game going up against him. And you better believe that is a matchup that they need to exploit. And they need to get inside Lester's head, and they need to exploit that. He's thrown over to first one time since July. Once. He's thrown, according to Fangraphs, August Fagerstrom, three pickoff throws since last year. Three times. The guy does not throw over to first, so you need to take those. If you look at that game against the Dodgers where they were just over there and they never really attempted a steal. They were over there dancing and moving around and getting these crazy leads almost halfway to second base, and they never would run. The Indians need to take advantage of that. They need to run like crazy. They need to continue to play like an LL team would, and they need to try and manufacture those sorts of situations that makes the Cubs uncomfortable, puts the pressure on them, uses that inexperience in terms of those sorts of situations against the Cubs, because they are a young team and they have to take advantage of that. And they have to do those things where they're taking extra bases, which they're the best in baseball at. They have to force their catchers to make good throws. David Ross is really good, but if Montero's behind the plate, run like crazy. He's got a 10% catching bases percentage, whatever you want to call it. I'm so amped up right now. I don't even it's just like you got to take advantage of those situations. Arrieta's 23 for 26. You can steal off of him. So like taking advantage of those small but really crucial parts of the game and making, like you said, just putting the pressure on the Cubs and getting them in those situations where maybe you see Madden sweat a little bit because maybe he doesn't have – yeah, maybe the numbers say one thing, but – you're looking over to the other dugout there, and Tito says, "Okay, well, maybe the numbers say that, but this is what I feel, and this is what I'm gonna do because I've been here before, and I know what move I need to make to win the game."
Well, to me, I mean, you know, forcing forcing Madden into some of those early matchups, if we can get at some of these starting pitchers, which has been difficult for other teams to do, he's really got this rotation set up in an interesting way. The Lester, Hendricks, Arrieta coming in game three, which, you know, last year would have been unheard of, but it's interesting. You bring in arguably one of the best pitchers of the past two seasons, even though he struggled a little bit this year, as your game three starter with this young Hendricks, who's looked great coming in game two. Hendricks is the atypical kind of, or the typical pitcher that's given the Indians trouble. This young guy who you think you could kind of get after. It seems like time and time again, the Indians have run into guys like this and have struggled. And, with their opening three, with Hendricks coming in game two and Arrieta in game three, I think you initially think advantage Cubs. The Indians are going to go with Bauer at home with that with the finger. And by the way, Trevor Bauer has become the absolute best Halloween. It's already the trending Halloween costume in Cleveland. If you don't have a Bauer jersey, get one and just dip your finger in ketchup, and you've got an instant classic Halloween costume. And then you've got Tomlin in game three, which is interesting because Tomlin has pitched so well. First question to you on this, on the Indians rotation. I got two. This is a two-parter. A guy I haven't mentioned yet, which potentially could be a game four thing. Tomlin in game three. Initially that surprised me. I figured he'd be a game two starter. Is this? It's going to sound silly, but are they?
I know where you're going.
This seems. It seems too basic, and I'm sure there's more to it than that, but certainly hitting the baseball has to be part of this, right? Like they're putting Tomlin in Wrigley because he can hit.
And absolutely.
The disadvantage that we have, of course, we have to potentially bench Carlos Santana. Don't go down that path yet. We'll get there in a second. Although the rumblings are that they may find a way to get him in the game, which I still can't believe, but we shall see. Are you nervous about that? You know, you mentioned Montero, and of course Montero was the catcher in Arizona when Bauer made his debut. It just makes me chuckle. You mentioned him, and of course Bauer immediately started calling him off, getting in his head. I could just imagine Bauer getting in his head if they're in the same game. But, are you worried about Bauer? He cut his finger. Obviously, there's going to be some healing. I don't think we're going to run into the same issues that we have in the past. With the finger, I think that's probably healed up enough that it's not going to bleed as it did before. Are you worried about him being the game two starter?
No, I think that's the right move. I think regardless of, I think absolutely Tomlin hitting is part of it. You have to factor that in there. And plus, even with the finger, yeah, he can pitch with it. Can he grip a bat with it? I mean, you don't want him doing that. That's an extra strain that you're putting on that pinky. When he's having to wrap it around the handle of a bat, I would think that sort of aggravation, regardless of where he's at in his healing process. So I think that if he's able to pitch, I'd throw him out game two. I mean, up in the ALDS, that's how it was supposed to line up in the ALCS. Kluber, Bauer, what I would go with. I have no issues with Tomlin pitching at Wrigley. I think it makes sense to put him in the NL Park. And I think it also helps them line up their rotation if you want to look at it from that perspective, because you go Kluber, you go Bauer, you go Tomlin. I mean, let's be honest, Kluber's pitching in game four. That's what's happening. It's pretty much set in stone. You don't have anything else to play for after this. As long as he can go, you throw him out there for game four. You see where you're at with game five? I mean, I think it's very much a game where you could go, and depending on what situation you're in, you go with a guy like Merritt to start it out. We're probably going to talk about it in a second, but you have a new weapon that you can throw out there for a couple innings, it looks like.
I'm so excited. I don't think it's a couple innings either. I think, talking about 65 or 70 pitches. And where this gets interesting for me is I can't decide if Cal and this is Mickey Callaway. He's not going to just Mickey Callaway's the one guy. Like I could see Francona coming out and say, "Yeah, like when Gomes, they put Gomes on the roster in the ALDS, and you're thinking, man, is he going to start?" And of course, we haven't seen him. But I think, is it possible that you know, when Callaway comes out and says 65 to 70 pitches for Salazar, I can't decide quite what that means. Is he the immediate, like, okay, if Bauer bleeds, we got Salazar? I can't decide if that's what he is. Yeah. I can't decide if they're lining him up for a game four start with perhaps Merritt backing him up. Or, you know, I mean, if the Indians are up 2-0 heading into Chicago, you know, maybe they decide to put Kluber into game four instead of game – or game five instead of game four. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, there's so many options now because essentially what they did, you know, I mean – you know, you're losing Cody Anderson, which is isn't losing really much of anything. And this
is
in a
rip- sad.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole nother podcast, but no, just don't listen to my starting pitching podcast back at the beginning of the year because I'm moderately embarrassed by it. But so I think that, you know, when you were talking about matchups earlier, you know, and you stop and you back up, while we don't have lefties, the one thing that struck me in the earlier series is that the one thing Francona kept saying is you don't worry about righty or lefty, you just put the best guy in.
Yeah.
And it seems to me, and this is just me, just kind of thinking out loud, it seems to me when you start from the back end of this and you know, and I can't believe I just called, you know, I almost said Adam Miller. I keep saying that. You got Andrew Miller at the back end of this bullpen and Cody Allen at the back end of this bullpen and Brian Shaw at the back end of this bullpen. So right there you're starting with three quality guys who can come in at specific points in the game and do different, amazing, wonderful things, depending on when you bring them up. Past that, you've got Merritt, you've got Salazar, you've got all of these long weapons that you can kind of mix and match and kind of supplement your rotation. Basically, you have exactly what people were talking about at the beginning of the year with all of these different arms. You've got think about our pen now. This is exactly what I wanted in July for our bullpen. We've got now Salazar as a bullpen guy. You've got Clevenger as a bullpen guy. You've got possibly Merritt as a bullpen guy. You've got, you know, so you look at those three guys and their arms, their elite arms. And Salazar's, I mean, if you put Salazar in a one or two inning situation in the fifth or sixth inning, if he's throwing the right way and if he's throwing as hard as he can and they just unleash him, it could be, I mean, he could be a back-end guy in the fifth or sixth. Now, we know his problems. We do know his problems. But, I mean, this is a guy, you know, this is an unknown now. This is an unknown that Joe Maddon now has to think about. This is another one of those head games. So, your best guess, like, where is Danny Salazar going to show up? Is he the ultimate backup to Trevor Bauer? Are they thinking – I mean, Callaway said 65 to 70. That's not a bullpen guy. That's a guy you're bringing in to start. Yeah. Are they going to start him? I mean, did they get what they needed out of Merritt, that unknown to Toronto?
Yeah, I don't know where he fits in. I think it's very much going to depend what their situations look like, right? You know, how these games play out. I think that's just so, like you said, 60 pitches is just, that's a lot. And is it coming in a sort of like Andrew Miller-esque role where, all right, Bauer, thanks for the four innings. We have a lead. Salazar, give me two, give me three, whatever you can give me, and shorten the game in that sort of a sense. That's a hell of a weapon to have. I mean, or is it a situation where, okay, we have a 2-1 series. Yeah, it would be nice to throw Kluber out there again, but let's give him an extra day's rest. Let's let him go five. Let's throw Salazar out there in game four and see how many innings he can give us. I don't know. It could be anything. I think it could be any of those things that you've mentioned. I think that it'll depend on what the situations look like, and I think it'll depend on, obviously, the minute he goes out there, if he's able to perform. And I can't think that they would put him out there if he's not ready to go. It seems like it would be, I mean, they tested it with the ALCS. There was thought that maybe he could be there. Now it's for real. Now he's on the roster. And I don't think that they would put him in this position if he wasn't there to help the team and he wasn't able to help the team. Because, I mean, we're talking about the highest stakes of the year. And if he's ready to go, then that's a hell of a weapon to have back there. And like you said, it's one heck of an unknown for the Cubs to have to deal with. Cause it's like, when's this guy going to come into the game?
Well, and you know, he's pitched once in his career against the Cubs, once, and it was last year, pitched fairly well against them. They haven't seen him at all this year, and I really, you know, when you talk about Francona and the moves that he made, that Ryan Merritt move was brilliant. They had never seen him. This is a guy who paints corners. The key for me with Salazar and the worry I think that everybody has is control. You know, I you know, the big thing for Danny Salazar is control. If he can nip corners, if he can use his arsenal and blow by people. But this is why the one or two innings potentially for him would be interesting to me. But I mean, let's face facts. I mean, there was a point in this year at the beginning of the year where he was as good a pitcher as there was in baseball. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's not forget he made the All-Star game. I mean, this is a guy who when he's on. And they've been handling him in a very interesting way, kind of mollycoddling him back from Arizona where, you know, every report I saw in Arizona was that he wasn't on. But this is probably the Indians management just letting him kind of loosen the arm up. As he started getting more serious pitching simulated games in the ALCS in particular, I heard a lot of pretty amazing reports about him going after – you know, finding velocity and finding location again. So I think it's an interesting wild card to have. Just one more thing that let me just put it to you this way. At a bare minimum, it's not Cody. I mean, Cody Anderson was on this roster. And I mean, this is no rip on Cody Anderson. It's just when you talk about Cody Anderson, you talk about Danny Salazar, I think the pedigree there, I mean, obviously you'd rather have Salazar there. So our bullpen is interesting as far as cannon arms go. I mean, we've got some interesting guys there. All right, let's kind of get to let's throw out one more rumor and before we wrap this bad boy up. Yeah. Carlos Santana fielding balls in left. And so of course the first thing that pops into my head is Carlos Santana fielding balls at third. Left is not third base, but, you know, the flip side of this is, you know, it's not like we're talking about, you know, the best left fielders in all of baseball for the Indians. I mean, we've got some fielding issues out in the outfield as it is. You know, is this a real deal? I mean, I've seen teams do this in the past where they'll plop a guy out there, you know, warm-ups and, you know, test out things and you know, Salazar is not an unathletic guy, but does this seem like a stretch to you? I mean, you want to get the bat in there, but wouldn't it? I don't know. Is this more of a one or two inning thing? You think? I mean, if it's me, and that's just me, and with the way Napoli's been playing, I mean, if he can continue what he's doing in Toronto, great. But if it's me, Santana's nowhere near sitting on that bench. Santana's playing first base, but you know, is Santana going to play left field or to get both of those big bats in there? Is this a wait and see? Let's see where we're at in game three sort of thing. Are they just trying to, again, get into the head of the you know, Joe Maddon on the other side of things? God, are we going to see Carlos Santana starting in left field for the first time in his career in the World Series game three?
Can I say all of the above? It could be anything. That's the fun. That's like the fun of this. It's like, oh, it could really be anything. You know, when I first was thinking about the whole DH situation and how you lose it when you go to Chicago, my immediate thought was, well, let's go back to some of that scary stuff that we've witnessed in the past few years. You shift J-Ram out in the left field. I mean, he's played there this year, so he's got left field experience. Put Santana back over at third. Knapp at first. I mean, you got Francisco Lindor and Jason Kipnis up the middle. That's all you need, right? I mean, why not?
I mean, Chito's
done this stuff. I mean, he put back in 04 and 07, he put Poppy at first base and he shifted his guys around. I mean,
I know.
I think, honestly, like you said, Jim, I think it's a little bit of everything. I think it's, you know, preparing for instances where, you know, you're in a situation where you're probably going to be able to utilize double switches and you're going to have to work around the fact that your pitcher has to hit. I think they're preparing for anything and everything.
Coming out today, you know, they're advertising the fact that they're working on their bunting. And while it threw Twitter into a friggin' frenzy, I mean, I, again, this, This to me feels like, and I mean, listen, I'm not even going to get into the Francona Bunning thing. I mean, we know where that conversation goes every time. Yeah. But this does, again, this kind of modus operandi that we keep coming back to is this messing with the head of Chicago. I mean, yeah. I don't think, you know, strategy wise, the day before the World Series, you advertise like your biggest asset. Of bunting all the time, which asset is, you know, I mean, you can imagine what Joe Maddon thinks of that. But, you know, is this just, it just seems to me like they're doing all of these different things and publicize these different things to kind of give Joe Maddon even more to think about. This could be overplayed. I mean, Joe Maddon, I'm making Joe Maddon sound like a Keystone Cop. I mean, this to me is a battle between who ultimately is going to be considered the best manager in baseball right now. I mean, to me, if Terry Francona wins this World Series, his third to Joe Maddon, zero, I don't care who you are. I don't care which metrics guy you are on this planet. And I got some, you know, some of our best friends, you know, you talk about Adam Burke, you talk about Mike Hattery, you talk about August already. These are some of the best minds in baseball. If Francona wins his third World Series, I don't care what you say about Joe Maddon. I don't care what you say about Joe Maddon. If Tito Francona wins this World Series against Joe Maddon with that Chicago Cubs team, the discussion's over.
Yep.
Over. He's the best manager in baseball. And I think when you look – if you step back and you look at the four seasons that Tito Francona has put together with his team, he got Andrew Miller. He got the best reliever in baseball, and that transformed how he handled that bullpen. To me, it's all about tools that Terry Francona has. In Boston, he was doing some insane things with that. Look what he did with that lineup against the Cleveland Indians, who were up 3-1. That lineup took every damn pitch. And you can't tell me that wasn't a Francona strategy with a very adept offense, with Manny Ramirez, with David Ortiz, with Kevin Youkilis. He gets how to manipulate ball games. And I'm telling you, man, he's doing some things right now prior to this series. It's making me chuckle because when I saw the bunt thing, I'm thinking, I mean, how many times have you asked yourself, you know, is he trolling us on Twitter? Yes.
Yes, he is. He absolutely is.
So this is a guy that just gets it. Boy, if we can get game, I was telling my dad today, man, if we can get game one, here we go. I'm starting to get amped up now. If we can get game one, Corey Kluber, and you get Trevor Bauer out in that hill, this is what Trevor Bauer was built for. This is what Trevor Bauer was built for. Nobody believes in him except every guy in that team that wears that Cleveland Indians jersey. Well, I'm just telling you. I mean, the funny thing, honestly, cut his finger playing around 2 days before his, 3 days before his start. He cuts his finger with a drone, of all things. And I'm sorry, on most teams, I don't know that that's going to fly with the rest of your team.
They unintended?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what's shocked me is that nobody blinked. Not one person blinked. They haven't changed the way they haven't changed their attitude. The only people that blinked are, you know, your and my favorite, you know, journalists out there who don't like him, the old school journalists out there that hate his guts. Right. Not one player on that team blinked. Terry Francona said some snarky things, did some normal things that he does as the manager in charge. But this is where it comes down to me, Nino, and I'm sorry, I'm rambling on and on. This is a team that Terry Francona has, for crying out loud, Trevor Bauer talking team, has Josh Tomlin humming in the playoffs. This is a guy who was getting shelled in August, shelled like you and I were pitching. He's got Danny Salazar back. He's got the best pitching coach in baseball that nobody's talking about. We've got the best reliever in baseball going up against Chapman. Can't wait to see those two on the hill at the same time on opposite sides. That ought to be fun. I can't wait to see Chapman walk out on the mound in Cleveland. Thank God it's not with our jersey on. I can't wait to see Roberto Perez gunning people down and framing. I can't wait to see Jason Kipnis, who everybody thought can't play this late in the season because he plays too hard. I can't wait to see him throwing up Mike Trout numbers because he's gonna. And my God, we haven't even talked about Francisco Lindor, who is the best shortstop in baseball. That's the one matchup, Nino. They do on paper have players better than us. They don't have Francisco Lindor. I don't care who Javier Baez is. I don't care where he plays. I don't care what he looks like on the field. Francisco Lindor can play baseball. Now, I'm not going to talk much about our outfield, but I'll say this. Lonnie Chisenhall has more key hits at different times throughout the season than almost anybody. Tyler Naquin, God bless him, he's not playing that great, but he's had his moments. You've got a guy, you've got a guy like, you know, Rajai Davis, who's struggled, but still, you know, if you can get him on base, he can do a lot of that stuff you were talking about earlier in the game. We got a really interesting matchup team. Yep. Who, if Tito Francona can get them to do what he wants them to, can really, really, really put it to Chicago. The only thing I worry about is if Chicago's offense gets going, because we saw what happened in 2007 with Boston. You start clicking on offense, sometimes you can't overcome it. But if they can get in Chicago's head, if they can run the bases, if they can do the little things that they've done so well all year to lead the Central since May. Now, you can talk about Chicago all you want. I don't know, man. Seems like a better matchup than people think.
It is. I mean, they have areas that you can exploit. They have areas. I mean, we saw it with the Dodgers that they were able to put together some stretches where it looked like, I mean, there's people when the Dodgers went up 2-1, they're like, oh, Cubs in trouble. Well, yeah, I mean, obviously they're in trouble. They're down 2-1, but it's just, like you mentioned, it's doing some of those things that make a team complete, and the Indians are able to do those things. And I think those are definitely worth talking about because, I mean, it's made a difference this far. I mean, you look at them. It's interesting. It's an interesting game at this point in the year. It's not the same game that you watch all year. It's you know, people were talking, well, you're not going to be going into the playoffs doing what they're doing without a rotation. Oh, really? Like, that's exactly what you're going to be doing in the playoffs, because guess what? You got a couple of the best relievers in baseball who can shorten the game. You got one of the best starters in baseball. You're going to use those guys 50% of the time. And that's exactly what he's done. Tito's done this far. That's exactly what the Indians need to do to win these games. They need to rely on those guys that can put up zeros and get them a lead and keep it.
All right. So here we're going to wrap things up and we'll be back periodically throughout this, but you know, as you and I are both about to head to Cleveland tomorrow night for game one in this crazy city that's going to be mobbed by basketball fans and baseball fans alike. It's come to the point now, Nino, where I'm going to ask you a question that everybody's going to be asking everybody tomorrow.
Yeah.
What's your prediction? Where are we going to? And I'm not a big prediction guy. It is a stab in the dark. But, you know, and we know after game three, as we head into game four, we don't really know where the rotation is going to go. And we don't really know what's going to happen yet in one or two. And we know that the World Series is as match up as they come, that when you get your back up against the wall, you have to do some crazy things. That being said, let's go ahead and throw some numbers out there. Who's going to win? I'm going to guess I know who you're going to say, but how many games do you think it's going to go?
I had somebody ask me today. It's like, well, what do you think? And I was like, you know what?
You don't have to commit. You don't have to commit. Okay. All right.
I looked at him and said, you know what, man? I'm just glad that we're here, and I'm just going to enjoy it. However many games it is, I think it'll be fun. This is a once-in-a-lifetime matchup. The fact that you have the two teams with the longest droughts of a World Series title win. You have a team that the time they were like the Indians won a World Series in forever, have at least won one the last time before the last time the Cubs were even there. I mean, that's insane.
It's been 68 years for the Indians. I mean, the last one we won was 48 with, of course, that great Lou Boudreau team that won in Boston against the Braves. But, you know, it's as you mentioned, like, we've won one since the last time the Cubs were in one. That's the best.
That's crazy.
That's the best. I mean, seriously, we get to the World Series in a way that only Cleveland can. We play the one team.
And we play the Cubs.
We play the one team that has just more of a deep-seated, like, just badness to them over the years. This, which is why this series is going to be so much fun, because the Cubs are not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, you can rip on their franchise over the years. But, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting. What's your call?
I told him, I said, you know, I'm just going to enjoy it. I'm going to enjoy this however many games it is. I think it's going to be fun. I'm going to be at game 1 and 2, and it's going to be great, and it's going to be some good baseball. It's going to be interesting baseball. I mean, we've talked about some of that stuff, but, you know, I'm just going to enjoy it. But, you know, Tribe in 6.
Oh, dang it. Damn you, Nino, son of a
bitch. Did I steal your thunder?
Oh, man. So I had this whole thing planned out.
You can take MVP, because I think we're thinking along the same lines.
All right, well, hold on here. So here's the thing. I mean, you know, we won the Boston series. We didn't win the Boston series at home. We won the Boston series in Boston, which I thought was funny because of Ortiz. We won the Toronto series in Toronto, which I thought was funny because both Batista was probably crying in the clubhouse. I cannot fathom.
Clinched the division in Detroit.
Yeah. I mean, everything's been on the road. You go back to the Cavs, you know, they win in Golden State. I mean, we get all this wonderful stuff here in Cleveland over the past 6 months, but we haven't gotten anything here. So there's no statistics behind this whatsoever. I want them to win in game 6. I don't want it to go 7, because I cannot fathom having to put up with another game 7 after 97. Give me game 6. Give me a win at home. If we can clinch a game 6, I don't know how I'm getting in that stadium. I'm getting in that stadium. You know, you might see me hauled off to jail. I'm going to get in that stadium. Game 6, Cleveland Indians. I think we're going to win both games in Cleveland. I think Chicago's going to win the first two in Chicago. And then I think we're going to win game 5. And we'll see how the pitching rotation. If Kluber goes game 4, that makes game 5 interesting to me, because I don't – Merritt, Salazar.
Yeah.
I could go a bunch of different ways. I keep saying to myself, why can't Andrew Miller start? But he probably could.
How come he was so such a bad starter, and now he's like – he's essentially been a starter in the playoffs, and he's been so – it's funny how baseball works, man.
I mean, it's – you know, he made some adjustments, you know, with the way his leg kicks. He's made a couple of shoulder adjustments in the way he throws the ball, little tweaks. And, you know, someone – I don't want him to stop being the best reliever in baseball. But
no.
If Mickey Callaway, you know, got on a conference call in, like, February and said, you know – we stretched Andrew out to about 60 pitches. We're thinking maybe he can start. I don't know that I'd be upset at that.
Barking up a price.
But that's down the road. That's down the road. I mean, all right. So MVP of the series.
Come on, baby. I know who you're leaning towards.
All right. So, I mean, I could go a couple different ways here. I'm probably going to surprise you on this one, Nino. I think maybe I'm not. I'm not sure. We haven't talked about this, but I think that the guy that's going to carry this team for the Indians is a guy that has been overlooked all season. I think at the end of the day, when he's playing well, he's the best player on this team offensively. And he hasn't yet done that. We saw mirrors of it a little bit in Boston. I think we're going to see it here in Chicago. We're going to see the hometown boy blow up his favorite team growing up. I think Jason Kipnis is going to be your MVP. I think he's going to go into Chicago, and I think he's going to light up Wrigley Field in front of his hometown crowd. And I cannot get past the fact that he grew up on the same street as Bartman. I'm sorry, that's karma. And that's going to bite Chicago in the butt. Jason Kipnis is your MVP, and he's going to have a huge series.
That's a good pick. I mean, I he's lit up Chicago before. It might be the White Sox, but it's still the same city. I mean, that's his place. Yeah, what did he say? He had a dream about doing it in Chicago. And yeah, I feel it. I like it. I'm with you there. That's a good thought. I thought for a while, I was like, oh, he's going to do it. He's going to pull the trigger on it. But
I think had you have asked me this 2 hours ago, I probably would have given you the guy I think you're going to say, but we'll see.
Yeah. So kind of the same deal. I think it's strange. I looked at his numbers and he hasn't been as absent as we've kind of think he has been, mostly because he hasn't had that big hit. Cause all year long, he's been the guy. He's come up and he's gotten the big hit, but he's been consistent. He's been, you know, here and there, but he hasn't been what he has been all year. He hasn't been J-Ram. And I think this is it. I think this is the series. The big lights are on. He's going to be walking out there with that swagger, and I think he's going to come up with a couple big hits. And I think J-Ram's going to be our guy.
If he, Nino, I can't even tell you how happy that would make me. Because he gives no shits, man. There hasn't been a series or a game he's been in where he's given – I mean, I don't think this game means any different than if you were playing at a Sandlot game in the Dominican on a Saturday, you know, after drinking all day. I knew you thought I was going there too. I I've been listening to Kipnis all day, and yeah. He can get under my skin. But I got to tell you, I love playoff Kipnis, man. I love him. I mean, he beat up Boston. I mean, he beat up Boston. But here's the thing with J-Ram that I think has been overlooked. And we'll kind of end it here because J-Ram's a great way to end anything. He may have saved a couple of games with some defensive work at third base. And this is a guy who's not a third baseman at heart. This is a guy who's a second baseman. He's playing that hot corner like he's been there his whole life. Defensively alone, he's playing against Chicago, that could be a big deal. If he has a couple of big hits in this series, oh, man. And just putting him on base, I mean, he's going to wreak havoc. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Watch. It'll be Carlos Santana playing left field.
I'm okay with that. The alternative's Coco Crisp. So I mean, can we do noodle arm out there? Like, really? I mean, I'm sure Santana could fire off a better throw.
Well, see, and this is why left field doesn't concern me all that much. I mean, you put the right outfielders out there with him, and maybe that salvages it a little bit. So we shall see. I think, you know, maybe after game two, if you and I can recover from those two games, you're going to actually
have a voice.
let's take a look. Maybe you'll get that off day. You know, we can stitch up your voice. Hopefully there's not too much blood dripping. Maybe we can come back sometime on Thursday and take another look at the series where we're at. Until then, it's been good being back. We got a long one today, but it's been a long time coming. Thanks for joining us at Everyone Hates Cleveland, the podcast. Like I said, we'll be back soon. I'm not going to commit to the off day, but we'll Nino and I will get together, figure things out. And our boy Steve Urbanek will be back from – he's in the Dominican right now, the jerk. Actually, you know what? Screw that. He's in the Dominican. We got the World Series right here in Cleveland, and that's where I'm going to end it. You know what? One last thing. I want to beat the Cubs, and here's why. Everyone does hate Cleveland. I'm convinced of it. And I got to tell you, when I picked the name of the site, you know, a bunch of us got together and picked the name of the site a few years ago. We went back and forth of whether or not that was a good name for the site. I got to tell you, man, I love the name of our site. It's so perfect. It has to be the Cubs, and we have to beat them because the national media is going to lap up the Cubs like they're a popsicle. And you know what? Screw them. Screw the national media. Screw 1908. Screw Tinker's Never's a Chance.
Screw most media. I mean, let's be honest.
And the next person that calls me, I am not media. And you are not media. We are bloggers.
Man.
But I digress. All right, till the next time, thanks for joining us on this podcast. Man, maybe I'll cut it up. It's a long one. I don't know. Life goes on. All right, till the next time. Go Tribe.
Have a good night, everybody.